Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Haworth Timber and Building Supplies 1840 podcast. I'm Paul Bullivant, your host. And in today's episode, we're putting a branch spotlight on our Enfield branch. And I'm really delighted to welcome up our two guests, Adrian Caxor, our branch manager, and Aaron Ford, who's our regional manager for the South, all the way up from London to come and join us today. So thanks for joining us. Thanks for coming up.
Thanks for having us.
I'm going to start in a slightly different place to normal. I like to do a bit of research on the towns that we're in when we're doing these things. I thought I'd just Google a few facts on Enfield. Obviously, being up from the grim north, it's not somewhere I'm particularly aware of. So, here's six facts about Enfield. Enfield is a town in North London with a population of 333,000. That's a big population. Yeah. That's not a million miles away from the likes of Leeds.
Yeah, no.
Which would see as a really big city. So that was a surprise. And there's lots of stuff going on in Enfield. Are you aware of all the stuff that's gone on in Enfield?
Adrian lives closer, so I'll visit the branch. But I don't, as it's out of the town, I don't go to the town centre too often.
No, but I was amazed at how much really big stuff's gone on. In June 1967, Barclays Bank in Enfield town centre opened the first ever cash machine. So the first cash machine in our world was opened in Enfield. I thought, well, that's big. Then there's this one. The first dishwasher to be mass-produced was produced in Hot Point's Enfield plant. The world's first solid-state colour televisions were manufactured by Ferguson in Enfield. So that's cash machines, dishwashers, televisions, and then for some real history, the Lee Enfield rifle was produced in the town and was the main firearm used by British military forces from 1895 to 1957. The name Lee Enfield comes from the designer of the rifle's bolt system, James Paris Lee, and the factory in which it was designed, the Royal Small Arms Factory, was in Enfield.
I didn't know any of those.
No. Yeah. And that Lee Enfield rifle ran across World War I, World War II. It played a massive part in both those World Wars. And there are famous people born in Enfield. This is proper who's who. So I didn't realise Enfield was such a place. Amy Winehouse.
Yeah, I knew she was from around that way, yeah.
Adele.
Yeah, North London, around that way, yeah.
Chaz and Dave. Now, they always portrayed themselves as Cockneys, didn't they?
Yeah,
but actually, they were all from North London. Now, I appreciate Enfield is a borough as well as a town, isn't it? So this is from Google, so it can't be wrong. Bruce Forsyth, David Jason, and then to get very highbrow, two prime ministers, William Pitt the Elder and Benjamin Disraeli. So there's a lot of stuff going on in Enfield. Did you know any of that?
I knew Amy Winehouse was born near there, and the other one, but the rest I didn't.
Yeah, of course, you've learned something today. It's been worth the trip from London.
Yeah,
to come and sit in front of a camera to learn that, which you could have done on Google from the office.
Yeah.
Right, let's get down to things. Let's just start with some introductions. So just a bit about who you are, what you do, where you've come from, your kind of your work careers, how you've ended up at Haworth. Start with you, Adrian.
Yeah. So, Adrian, branch manager at the Enfield branch. Started last year, April.
Yep.
So, it's not been a year. Aaron approached me, had a good chat with him.
Last April.
Started my career in a place called Long and Somerville, which was literally probably half a mile to where I am now, in Enfield.
Okay.
And then from there, I went to Battles. Another small independent.
Yep.
Started in the yard, went through yard, serving on the counter, stock controlling, ABM, and the branch manager. Been a branch manager since I was about 26. So I've been about 10 years now, on and off. Been working at different sort of merchants as well, juicings and all sorts. So, yeah.
Okay. Can we go back a little bit, though, and talk about your earlier story? Because obviously, by your accent, you're Polish.
So,
if you're happy to share, it'd be really interesting to know.
I'm originally from Poland. Yeah. Came over to the UK when I was about 11 years old with my mum, dad and my sister.
Yeah.
When I came over, I only knew about four words, how to say in English. And I can't say them on the podcast because they're not very good words, to be honest with you.
Okay. What brought your family over?
I think they just want a different life sort of thing, pretty much back then, Poland wasn't the sort of wealthiest country in the world.
Okay, yeah.
And I just came sort of to get probably a better life for myself and my sister.
Did you take it was your mum and your dad?
Yeah.
Had one of them got a job to come over to? Or literally you moved?
So my mum and my dad came over first. I was staying with my grandma. They came over for about 6 months. And then after that, my mum came over, picked us up, and then brought us into the UK.
Amazing.
And that was before the Poland came into the EU as okay. well. So, yeah, it was fun.
How did you feel about that? Because 11, you say you were 11?
Yeah.
Because 11's at that kind of formative age, isn't it, where you're going from child to young adult?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, if I'm, to be honest with you, I've been living in the UK for about 25 years now.
Yeah.
So UK is like my home.
Yeah. But when your mum came and said, right, we're all going to England, what did you think then?
At first I was excited because I didn't know what England is all about,
yeah.
to be honest with you. So I was excited. And then when I came over, I thought, what are we doing here? I can't speak English. I don't know anything. I don't know anyone. And it's like, what are we doing here? But, you know, I went to school, went to college, done my university degree. And, yeah.
Just, you've done really well for yourself.
Yeah, yeah.
Having come across like that. Did you go straight into senior school?
Yeah, so I went to high school year 8. When I was in Poland, when I was 11, I started smoking. I smoked for about 3 months. And then I came over to the UK and I had to quit because I couldn't buy any cigarettes.
So that's the time you took from that. That's quit
smoking. That's quit smoking, yeah. So, yeah.
How did you go about learning the language? So if you came with 4 swear words, your total vocabulary. That's why you've got into builders merchant, isn't it?
Well,
you can swear.
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
So you learn language.
At school, to be honest with you, I went to a school where there wasn't a single Polish person, so I couldn't really translate or anything. So I had to learn pretty much the hard way.
So you went straight into year 8.
Yeah.
With no English.
Yeah.
And you were expected to just pick it up.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah, but you know, I managed.
I guess you sink or swim.
Yeah. I mean, when you're young, when you're a kid, you pick it up a lot quicker. It's like I got 2 girls, one is 3, the other one is 7. And we speaking Polish to them. And then when they went to like nursing and school, now they come home, they just want to speak to in English. And we're like, well, I don't understand what you're talking about, speak Polish. Because we don't want them to forget the Polish language.
Yeah, that's good.
You know, it's being bilingual, it's good, it's good.
Did it take you long to settle in at that age?
Not really. I think I went straight into it pretty much when I came over. I think I had to wait a week before I went to school. It was a bit hard because obviously didn't have really that many friends back then until probably year 9 and 10, pretty much after school, straight home, PlayStation, and that was it, really. But yeah, after that, after the years went by, met a lot more new people, went out a lot more and so on, so on. Yeah.
Cool. And then you went to college?
College, yeah.
Do what?
Construction management. And then I went to a university to do, again, construction management.
Nice.
So, yeah. And then whilst I was doing my university, I was looking for a part-time job. I applied for a place in called Long and Somerville as a yard man. And then back then I had a phone where I had to top up my card. And I think I had about 10 missed calls and about 5 voicemails. So I had to top up my phone to listen to the voicemails. And it was one of the owners of the business saying to come over for an interview. I came over and then I am.
What would have been your other job options rather than builders merchant if you'd done construction at uni? Into kind of like the surveying side? And
so yeah, surveying side or construction management on site, being a project manager and all that sort of thing. So I was heading in that direction. But then as I was doing my part-time job at builders merchant, the opportunities came over from a yardman going to the office and then ABM. After a while, it's like, if there's nothing else, you sort of, you know so much about it that it's easy to get into construction, into builders merchant, into that environment. And it's quite hard to get out.
Yeah, okay. Did you go to uni in London?
Yeah, East London University. I live sort of in East London as well, so I didn't have about too far to travel. So
I wouldn't think we've got many degrees in amongst our builders merchants, in amongst our branch managers, will we?
No,
I've not got a degree. Is England your home now, do you think?
Yeah. Well, we go to Poland probably 2-3 times a year. If we're there for too long, it's like, oh, we just want to go back to the routine. Because it's nice at the beginning where you meet all the family and everything else. And it's nice because you don't have to go to work. You don't have to do anything. But then you're like, everyone else on the Monday to Friday goes to work. And it's like, oh, let's just go back.
So home. Which is home now? England?
England, yeah. I'd say England. It's Poland, it's nice to visit, nice to meet the family and all sorts. But pretty much my girls go to school here and everything. So It's around where we
live. But I guess if you've lived in England for 26 years and you've had 11 years in Poland, yeah. then this is it.
Why have these girls got London accents?
Yeah. Well, one of the 7-year-olds got American accent because of the YouTube videos and everything else. Like that,
yeah. I know this is slightly random and nothing to do with builders merchant, but I'm intrigued. How come you started smoking at 11?
Just friends. Just met up with friends and then, just, you know.
A lot of smoking or just the odd one?
Oh, probably 5 a day, I would say.
Oh. That's probably saved your health then. Probably. As you got over in London. Down to a lot. Disease. So thank God fags are expensive in England.
Yeah, oh yes. Yeah,
right. Thank you. Aaron, I've forgotten the question. Just to introduce yourself. So a bit about you, a bit about your career in Arworth, where you started, where you got to, what you're doing.
Well, I left,
whatever you want.
Left school at 16, went to work up in big city of London at 16. Was working sort of admin for an advertising company, Charlotte Street, near the West End.
Yeah.
I remember going at 16, getting on the train up London at 6:30 every day. And then I'd done it for 2 years and just it wasn't for me anymore. Yeah. And I was the youngest person when I started the company. I was the youngest person 2.5 years later when I left, believe it or not. So yeah, I left there about 18 and a half, coming up to 19. And then I got a sort of part-time job with my dad at Sprockley for a few months, then moved over to Dartford.
So your dad was branch
area manager at the time. Yeah, we'd just taken over the Dartford branch. It had 3 branches in the area. And it was a part-time job, still looking for my path. Still a part-time. Yeah, so everyone fell into merchanting. Was never planned to be in merchanting, but yeah, it's a 20-year stay now.
What was it like working with your dad?
Yeah, fine, we got on really well. Yeah, people say they can't work with their parents and other bits, but I never really found much issues with pretty similar and didn't argue a lot at all, to be honest.
He just brought you in just initially short term,
short term, and I don't think he wanted me going in merchant. Like he didn't want to be in merchant. I got into that, and then and then many years of sort of still not knowing what I wanted to do and other bits. So I'll take the diploma and degree that were on offer, and then sort of went through there.
So you came into Broccoli,
yeah.
Did a bit there, then moved to Dartford
for a few years, and then done a bit there, and then we'd come back over to Broccoli because it was slightly closer to home, and the new manager at the time, so my dad went back into there,
yeah.
And then 20 years later, now the regional manager of six branches.
How long were you manager at Broccoli?
Broccoli was a manager, was about a year and a half, I suspect, and then a year and a half to 2 years, and then about 2 years at Dartford. When I was at Dartford, I was area manager as well as manager. Yeah. And then after 2 years of manager was then regional manager.
Yeah.
And 20 years with Howarth this July, I think. But I look back through bloody hell where them 20
years.
Where's
that time?
Yeah.
As a young man. Time does travel fast.
Yeah, three kids later and other bits, and you just think, oh, yeah.
Yeah. Just explain about the diploma, because I've forgotten about that.
Yeah, it was a BMF diploma funded by the BMF. A guy called Peter Kelly, actually, who was with us at the time, come down to the branch and was explaining. He said to me, Dad, I think Aaron will be good at this. He should go into it. And then your dad, I think his response was, no, it's too young for him. It's too early for him. He's too busy going out on the weekends and won't put the effort into it. And Pete was like, no, you've got to put him into it. And then it put me in for that. It was a year and a half to 2 year course.
And it's formal.
It's a formal
education.
Yeah, formal education. And it took the best part of it, 18 months to 2 years. And then the next step is the degree. And of the people who did the diploma, two of us went on then to do the degree that was funded by the BMF.
Excellent.
I mean, the other 10 just thought, no, I saw this, I've had 18. And then we went on to do the degree
part. And that took, what, another couple of years?
No, that was only a year, that part. It was not sort of 70% of it was done in the diploma.
Okay. But that's a formal degree, so it's a BSc, whatever.
Degree is recognised as such. So, nice. Yeah, and that was through Howarth.
Did you ever think you'd do a degree?
No. I wasn't educational. I couldn't stand school. Sports, getting into trouble, the other things that people who find themselves in merchanting probably do. If you would have said to me at 18, you'd do a degree, I'd probably thought, nah.
So why? So with all that?
Make me own way somehow, somewhere. But yeah.
So what prompted you to do it then with all those things going on?
It's a good opportunity and it's funded by the BMF, so I was there to lose out of it. And then went on the first one, wasn't sure, I was like, oh, back into education again. And then I thought, no, actually, after a few, it's like, oh, no, actually, I could do this. It's not too bad.
Yeah.
And then your outlook changes. But the first course, you're like, oh, it's like being back at school. And then you just look at it differently and go from there, sort of thing.
Do you think formal education's helped you both in your careers?
Yeah, I think so, definitely. You've think about things differently, more maturely, I think. Yeah, not a lad anymore. He's like, I don't care about this and that. You know, you put effort into this education. You want to get something out of it. You know, there's no point of doing it. If you think, I'm just going to make it nice and easy for me and then won't take anything out from it.
It helps you understand the economics of business much better than being at a branch as well. Mm-hmm. You understand the broader implications of all your decisions, margins and other things. It just being in that classroom away from the branch, it's like, well, actually some of these logics apply to all businesses, not just ours. It just gives you that better education, basically, on that you get just selling branch wood.
Okay, good. Right, a bit of history about the South for us, because obviously Awarth Timber started in 1840 up in Leeds. 80% of our branches are in Yorkshire and Lancashire, and then we've got three branches down in London. Do you know the background to
Mostly. Not all of it, because I was, when we opened in London, it would have been three. But I'll give a vague history. It was 1989, and they acquired a site in Broccoli Cross, which is southeast London, which is still there now. And at the time, they were looking for someone to run it, and it was my dad.
Oh.
And so he opened up the branch. It was a sort of very old school timber merchant with not a lot of stock, and come a long way over the next 30 years as such.
Yeah.
But within a few years of opening the London branch, an opportunity come up in Tottenham. So they expanded in Tottenham as well and got a really good guy called Dick Ribbons as the manager. Okay. He was with us about 20 years. Very, very popular with a lot of the older managers. Only a few now would have known Dick. But he was a very, very good manager, and he was with us for quite a long time and going really well with my dad. So it was he retired some years back. And then it would be 20 years ago, we've got Dartford. So Dartford's been there 20 years now.
So all three have basically come from your dad slagging things up to Nick. And
And the Dartford one was actually bought for a supplier rep, knowing Kelvin, the manager, business it was.
Right.
So we bought it off Kelvin, whose business it was.
Yeah.
And it was a guy called Clive, who sadly died the last few months. He was a guy called Clive at Keepak. And he was friends with Kelvin through Leeds and playing football. Okay. And he said, Gary, you look, Kelvin looking to sell his business, it would be a really good opportunity, and that's how they got it. So it just shows networking, the results of networking sometimes.
Networking and fate,
Kelvin's still with us now as the rep there 20 years later.
So go on with the story of Tottenham, because Tottenham's eventually ended up as Enfield.
So Tottenham, like I said, Dick Ribbons was the manager for many, many years, and it was a really good branch, but it was a lease branch, and as the lease would come to an end, the building was getting older and older, and the area changed a lot in the 20 years, so it become less affluent and less business in there. The location of it was never a great location anyway. It was around the beaten track a little bit, so they decided not to renew the lease. And then we moved to a different branch in Tottenham around the corner, but I'd say that was more of a stock gap. It wasn't an ideal branch. It looked like it was a good location, but for whatever reason the collections just didn't come, because the part of Tottenham was in. And then an opportunity come to move to Enfield about 3 years ago. It was Enfield Timber for many, many, many years, an old school timber merchant, proper old school, no, not a lot of building materials. It was them for many, many years, probably 50 to 60 years, I don't know how long, but it was there for a long, long time as Enfield Timber. A company called the Timber Group took it over.
Okay.
Part of the Southern Timber Group. They were only there a couple of years, and it didn't fit their model. They needed a bigger branch for what they want to do. They do a lot of bulk timbers. So they moved up to Hoddesdon, and then it became vacant again. And then that's how we took on the branch from the Timber Group 3 years ago. And Adrian's now there as the manager.
Nice. That's quite a story then for anyone.
Two
Tottenham branches. How far is Tottenham and Enfield?
15 minutes south of the branch.
Obviously, I'm born and bred up in the north, so we're just used to seeing fields and stuff, you know, we're not used to seeing loads of people.
Yeah.
What are the challenges of operating in a big...
Probably traffic is the biggest one.
Yeah.
Prime example, yesterday we had our planned day out, all transport, all sorted. And just because of the rain and the amount of traffic, we had to fail to deliver us, which we had to get them down today.
Yeah.
Which obviously affects our sales and everything else. But I think the main one in London is the traffic. A slight accident and stuff, and everything just stops, and then people try to go around there, and then something happens there. It's just I think the main sort of issue is the traffic.
And I guess there's just nothing you can do with that, is it? Traffic's traffic.
Traffic.
Yeah. Sometimes Enfield's all right for traffic, and other times it's stand still.
Yeah. Just depending on the day. Sometimes you plan out and the drivers are back at 2 o'clock and you thought they're gonna be late. And then the other day, you plan it out, you think, oh, the drivers are going to be back early. They don't come back till about 5 o'clock. It's just on the day.
Is that, I assume customers are used to that. That's just how it is.
We communicate with our customers. Yeah. If there's any slight issue, we sort of get our drivers to call us. Say, Adrian, there's an issue on the M25.
Yeah.
I'm stuck in traffic. And then we look at the second one. So we're like, all right, let's make the customers aware that they might not get the delivery. It's all about the communication. And I think customers appreciate that because then they know they don't have to wait. They can actually do something else rather than just sit there and wait.
Is there a lot of other merchants close by?
Oh, plenty. Yeah. I think there's about 10 within like 3 mile radius. And everyone's competing.
So competition's hard.
Yeah.
Yep.
Traffic's horrendous.
Yep.
It's all going in your favour, Adrian. You'll be really pleased.
No, I mean, to be honest with you, I sort of enjoyed the challenges when I was a branch manager at a different place. I used to drive to work in the morning, and in my head, I thought, okay, I'm going to do this, and that today. As soon as you walk in, you're not done anything.
It's gone.
It's gone out the window.
Forget all that.
Yeah. And you felt disappointed about it. After a few months of thinking, oh, I've not done this, I've not done that, but I've got a 5 grand sale out of this customer, or I've done this today, which is going to help in the future. And there's all sorts of things. And you have to spin it into the positive rather than just being negative, because otherwise you might as well just give up.
I'm assuming, like in the majority of London, there's a real mix of nationalities in the area.
Yeah. So we get a lot of Turkish, Albanian, Romanian, Polish.
Okay.
So we get a lot of those type of nationalities.
And does that change how we operate? Is language an issue?
Or? Sometimes it's an issue. But me being Polish, no, I don't speak Turkish or Albanian, but I sort of, you get the gist of what they're looking for.
Yeah.
Even if they're speaking broken English, you sort of listen to them.
And then
you go and show them, is this what you mean? Sometimes you have to take your time with them and show them. And they're like, yeah, I need 5 of them. But it's good fun. It's good fun because sometimes they've got customers, they know they can't speak English, and then they laugh about it themselves. So it's good fun.
Well, you've been through it yourself, haven't you?
Yeah.
You talked about when you came across at 11 and all you could do was swear and smoke.
Exactly.
But you got by.
A few years in Enfield, he'll talk Albanian. So, he'll be an ambassador for it.
Are there any noticeable differences between the different nationality tradesmen? So are the needs of a Polish builder the same as an Albanian builder, or do they expect different?
No, I think they all expect lower prices. No matter what price you give them, they'll just like ask for discounts.
So that's the language of the world.
Yeah, that's it. They can't say a word, but as soon as they're like, oh, give me a discount, that they can, every builder can say that. But no, I don't think there's any difference between them. I think maybe they're not as organised as you like them to be.
That's every builder.
That's
why builders merchants.
I think builders merchants exist, because you've got customers go, oh, I need this delivered. Can you deliver today? It's 2 o'clock in the afternoon. What do you think the answer is going to be?
Yeah.
Oh, can you do it tomorrow morning? No, because I've got slots already for that. I can do it in the afternoon for you, or you can pick it up. It's like, oh, I'll pick it up because I'm desperate for it. So I think that's every builder. especially this sort of your independent, your sole builders, and I think they're not as organized as the big boys, are they?
Have you seen, so in your 20 or 20-ish years in the industry, have you seen any change in building in London? Has it always been really diverse? Has there always been lots of nationalities?
The weird thing with London is you can go certain pockets of London and there's a couple of nationalities. So in southeast London, where Rockby is, still a lot of the builders around there are still English. And you do get other nationalities. But Enfield is by far the most diverse place of any of our branches. It's got so many different nationalities. And actually, the English
midfielders would probably make up 20%
of
if that. And Dartford again is 80% English builders. So there's pockets of London. There's towns within cities. Basically, it's like loads of mini towns within a city where the dynamics are totally different.
Yeah.
There's no real comparing Enfield to the other two, if that makes sense.
It's, well, and those are the problems of traffic and lots of competition. Has that changed over the last 20 years?
Traffic is horrendous because we've got a useless mayor. So and low traffic neighbourhoods that they put in certain places. You've got a low traffic neighbourhood by the branch, which is called Nightmares for branch and businesses. Yeah. You can't approach the branch from one side now because you have to go around the houses at a certain time.
I've not thought of talking about that, but obviously living up here, you hear it on the news or you read it occasionally in the paper. What does it actually... In practice, what does it mean to you? How does it impact everybody in those areas and us as a business?
Well, most people, most businesses, it impacts them quite negatively. It's the only people who feel the benefit of the people who want a nice, clean pollution, the clean air in their neighbourhood that might live there. And most working people hate them because they're now sitting in 20... If you slow all the traffic down by 10 miles an hour, it's going to cause more traffic. Because everything's going
slower. And that was part of it.
Yeah, slowed it, and
so we're like 30s now, 20.
For the
majority of London is 20 miles an hour.
Yeah. So now you're sitting in more traffic, which, if you think about it, if there's more traffic, they pollute more out of sitting there longer. In my opinion, it's just madness.
And it means if you want to travel through the different zones, you have to pay.
If you've got the U list now as well, which obviously certain vehicles on pretty much, if you have an older lorry and you're driving the Eulis, you can pay £200 a day just to be driving.
Do we do that?
No. Our lorries are sort of up to the standard that they need to be. So otherwise, we wouldn't be able to deliver into London at all. If you have to pay £200 every time you go in there a day, how much profit are you losing straight away?
So the main impact then is it just slows everything down and congests everything.
Yeah, basically, which means days take longer to get through. You could get less deliveries done on certain days than you probably would have 10 years ago. And the idea of getting more cars off the road from my time of driving London the last 20 years, there's more cars now than ever. Yeah, there's more. So people just paying more, isn't it? It's not having any effect on the amount of cars on the road because the train service is a much better mode. Although the underground's pretty good, but you can't deliver goods on the underground.
Is that the general opinion then of people who live in London that it's all just a waste of time and it's just another tax?
Yeah.
Rather than it.
A lot of people. Yeah.
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 Yeah, the view is, a lot of working people, the view is very dim. A lot of general people born in London do not live in London anymore. There's been a massive outpour of your old school traditional builders who are now down on the coastal towns, Kent and Essex and other bits because they just couldn't stand the traffic and other parts of London anymore, which is now being replaced by different communities, which isn't a bad thing. It's just a different setup from what it was 20 years ago.
Oh, yeah.
So you've got 20 merchants within 5 miles, 10 in three.
A lot.
How do you try and set yourself apart from the competition?
You have to take care of your customers, whether that's price, whether that's the service, or just the communication with the customers. A lot of it is you have to put all three of them together. You can price a job, give them a price on some timber one day. They're like, I'm placing an order. Next day they come in with a competitor's quote. Oh, can you beat those prices? Which are exactly the same product. Well, you priced them a week ago, but they got a better price from someone else. And everyone's just competing, especially in the market now. Now you have to fight for every order. And you have to have the stock available. Because no one wants to wait anymore.
So you took over
last year, April.
Okay, so nine months. Yeah. What changes have you made in that short time to tick those boxes of price, service, and good comms?
Well, pretty much since I started, the first thing I've done is put lights in the shop because there was 25% only of the lights that work in the shop. I started in April where the days were longer.
Yeah.
So it was still dark, so I can imagine what it was like in the winter.
It took a few months to realize, then it started getting dark. It's like, I got
to be. So I said to Aaron, first thing we need to do before we do anything is fit new lights in there because people actually see what they're buying. So that was the first thing. And then I think since then, we probably introduced about 700 different product lines into the shop and yard.
Yeah.
From, you know, different range of silicons to screws and everything else. Pretty much every day a customer comes in and goes, have you got this or that? It's like, no, straight away on the list. I need to look into it because next time someone comes in, well, I'm going to make sure I've got it. Maybe it hasn't increased the amount of people coming in, but it definitely increased the spend that they do with us.
Yeah, the basket size.
The basket size is a lot bigger.
Yeah, and then ultimately that will lead to larger football.
Exactly. That's what the long term. So people, especially in the communities like Turkish or Albanians, they work together. They talk to between one another.
Yeah.
And it's sort of like, where'd you get your materials from? Oh, go down to Harvard because they'll always look after me. They've got a good wrench, you know. That's what I want to aim at.
So it's all been about getting work on the basics that weren't right as you came.
Yeah, pretty much. I think that was the main thing.
Bring the right people in place.
Is it easy? How easy is it to recruit in London?
It's hard.
We've had roles on for going on 5 months with 4 agencies before in certain roles, and not found anyone in that period of time. So certain roles are very, very hard.
That's a common problem across the whole business. You talk to any branch, and every branch is reporting the same thing. It's harder and harder to recruit. Why is that the case, do you think?
Especially the younger generation. I think they all want the big, nice offices where they can go and make themselves coffee, free lunch and everything else. That's what it's in their head.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, builders merchants
saying it's not that, is it?
It's not that. It's the completely opposite, you know. That's why it's hard to get the younger generation into the builders merchants.
Do you think that's going to be a continuing problem for the industry, not just in London? Because I think that problem that you described there is not just a London.
I think it's going to be harder and harder to recruit. And you probably see the older people, like maybe, not older, but they're in the 30s where they've tried different things and maybe they don't work out for them. And then they come across builders merchant and maybe they see, like, oh, this is for me, actually enjoy this type of environment.
Yeah.
Because not like big offices and in the town, it's not for everyone.
No.
It's not, because it's like my wife, she works in one of the big places. And sometimes the things I say that happen in the branch, in the I environment, she says, I would never be able to say that or do that in my offices. Not everyone is sort of born to be able to go into the big
office. So when you took over in April, if you had to score the branch out of 10, one being horrific, 10 being amazing, what would you have scored it as you started?
I would say probably a 5, because it wasn't too bad, because we've got people that have been the 20, 30, 40 years sort of thing as well, so the knowledge was there.
Yeah.
The material was well. So they weren't too bad. I mean, they had a good range, but I knew the range had to improve. People in the office, great as well. They were good as well. And one or two, so we had to look into staff issues and stuff like that. But, you know, that's, I think that's every merchant.
Yeah, it is. And where have you got to now?
That really well.
So where are we now? We're sort of league table moving up.
Probably
8.
That's good. That's
still
that's
not there.
That's good improvement in 5 months.
Yeah.
When you've got a number of issues that are out of your control.
Yeah, definitely.
You can sort of see it straight away, because as soon as you move up the league table in sales, you know you're doing something right. Because when I started, I think first 3-4 months was always at the bottom, wasn't it?
Yeah, I remember that, yeah.
Yeah, and then we're sort of moving up. And so, yeah, that must be an improvement somewhere.
And what, if I was a customer, why would I want to come into Howarth at Enfield?
There's knowledge, definitely. Yeah. People have got a lot of knowledge down there. Customer service. Again, every customer that comes in, it's a potential sale. The way we work in our branches, every customer that comes in, speak to them with a smile. No matter what, if you had a bad mood, like in a bad mood, anything like that, if you're not up to it, just say it, and someone else will get up and serve them with a smile and have a joke with them and everything. So I think that's what's driving people coming into the branch, where they know they can sort of have a good chat, have a laugh, they'll be looked after, and we'll do our best to accommodate their needs.
Where have you learned that from? The importance of customer service and the smile on the face?
I think it's sort of come through the different merchants that I worked. You sort of learn something new every day in the merchants, and when I took over, I had a branch when I took over at Juicens. Again, it was quite low in the league table sales. And within a year, I think we were like third in the league table in sales. So again, it was just literally just speaking to every customer, provide the service they expect at the right price. That's what they're looking for.
Yeah.
You know, you can let down a customer, but as long as you have the communication with them, our lorry is broken down. Unfortunately, we won't be able to get it delivered out today. Can we do it tomorrow, first thing? 9 out of 10 times, they're fine.
Yeah, aren't they? One of my old bosses years ago, his advice he gave me was always work on the principle of no surprises. Mm. He was talking about me to him. He said, don't ever give me any surprises. If you're going to do it, do it. Mm. If you're struggling, you can't do it, tell me, because then it's my job to... his job to make sure that it was right. And I've always tried to live to that. You don't want surprises, do you?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That's when it gets you. What will you be focusing on then for the next 12, 18 months? So you've gone from 5 to 8, you've put some lights in so people can actually see what you've got, you've increased the range, you've moved some people about, you've taken some out, brought some in.
Yeah.
So you've got all the component parts
the moving forward. That's
good. What's the next thing to be working on?
Well, I think it's getting more sales in, getting the footfall through the door. I think that's our sort of priority at the moment. Yeah.
And how are you going to, what's the plan for that?
So we've hired actually another external sales rep within branch. Mm-hmm. And luckily for us, he used to work in a competitor locally.
Okay.
And he knows a lot of customers locally as well. So pretty much out and about daily. Even like myself and my ABM, we go out as well. Sites, have a chat with them. We've gained quite a few customers like that already that are sort of come our regulars now.
Okay.
Because it's like a lot of people say, I've driven past your branch pretty much every day.
And I never
tried you. So it's like, well, come in and try us and we'll see what we're about. That's the aim, is to concentrate on the footfall, because our transport is always busy. I'm not too sure, like up north, you could probably get more deliveries out. You might have to travel the more further distance.
Enfield's even harder than Dartford and Broccoli, even, because the two main roads into you are just always
struggle. Always struggle.
Whereas Dartford, even though it's near London, it's and the tunnel and the bridge is all right. They can move around the town very freely most of the time. Broccoli is inner a little bit, so they can do the local stuff actually quite easy sometimes.
Yeah, whereas Enfield's on the inner out.
Yeah, it's got busy main roads, and it's an intersection of a lot of places. So what happens is it clogs up more than a lot of other areas.
Because you've always got people coming out and people going.
Yeah,
yeah. And people
A10 is an absolute nightmare. It's like having a mini motorway within the town, isn't it?
Mm. Yeah, it is. Yeah, and to be so, I think sometimes you get an email from Aaron or from Nick saying, you know, your transport numbers ain't as what they are sort of up north or whatever branch comparison. You read that and you're like, I know that, but there's not much I can do about
that. I'm still going to pester you.
You're still going to pester me, which I know, but...
I'll be right about that.
Yeah, you take it on board, but there's only so much you can change. You can't remove the traffic out of London.
Small wins.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so that's the message I'm getting. That it's about small wins. It's about finessing what you've done. It's keep grinding away at the stuff that you know works, which is no magic answer.
No, exactly.
It's, as you said, price, service and good communication.
Yeah. So that's the main things.
That's good. But sometimes there aren't magic answers, are there? You can go looking for magic answers and they're just not there. You've just got to be better at doing the day-to-day stuff that makes a difference.
Yeah, you increase your customers, sort of customer by customer.
Right, I'm going to slowly start wrapping things up now and go back to talking about you two as individuals, just interested in stuff through your careers. Adrian, what's the proudest moment of your career so far?
I think knowing that I can tend like any place around going in my head, I'm confident no matter what state the branch is. I know I might not be able to, you know, turn around in at 6 months or a year, but I know in my head that I will achieve my goal of turning the place around. I've done it before with the same aspects of what I'm doing now, and it just proves now I'm doing the same thing as I've done in another merchant, and it's working, it's showing progress.
Do you think that mentality's come from your early years and moving to England from Poland?
Maybe. I think it's everything to
me. Because if you can move country, not speak the language,
and
end up in university within five,
Yeah. I think that's got aspects of it. I think the support of different people. I know I got full backing of Aaron, for example. I know like anyone in the head office, I ring them and I know they'll help me. Even the aspects of when I got home, first thing my wife goes, how's your day at work? And then she will give you some points to be honest. and she goes, oh, maybe you should have done it this way and that way. And sometimes it's like,
what you're saying is, no matter what you do, women all know it's no
good. Oh, yeah.
I was going to position it slightly differently. Is that everybody's trying to tell you what to do.
Yeah.
Right, Aaron, what's the biggest mistake you've made and what lessons did you learn from it?
I don't really look back on things as a mistake or regrets. I don't really look back. You know, things happen, you move on and you learn from them and then you go forward. I'm not big on how did this happen.
Okay, forget the biggest mistake, but then lesson. Tell us about a lesson that you learned from something that didn't go well.
It's over 20 years, it's hard to pinpoint exactly. Probably should have took it more seriously when I was a bit younger.
What, really young? Like,
yeah,
18 is
started. Yeah, I started really thinking I'd landed any career that early sort of optimism about to do anything,
right?
You know, and that sort of youngest going out drinking every weekend, everything else, but. It got to where I am now eventually. So will I've got there sooner? I don't know. But I don't sit there going all thinking about it too much. But I don't really regret many things, to be honest.
The world's a strange place, isn't it, with fate? You, there's lots of doors.
But well, there will always be things you could have done better and mistakes, but I never sit there and think, oh, I just move on. Like I say to managers, look, if you do, just the best thing to do is just get it sorted. And then learn from it and move on. Don't dwell on things, because when you start dwelling on things, then you really compound a mistake rather than just go right.
Thinking it, yeah. Okay.
Deal with it.
Anything else you want to talk about Anfield?
It's a progress. It's a project.
Yeah.
I remember going in there before, I started just to have a look around. And I thought straight away in my head, all right, we need to do this and that. So in my head, I already knew what needed to be done. And we're slowly doing the things that we need to do. Good thing is, got a team that all wants to do well. That's the main thing. If you've got the team that wants to do
well. Are you happy with where you've got to in 9 months?
Yeah, definitely.
You're on track for where you want to be.
Exactly, yeah. I don't know how long that's going to take, but it's sort of every month it's a progress, so which is the main thing.
The branch is definitely heading in the right direction. I think the agent is 100% the man to take it forward. I just think that Aiden will do everything within his control and the branch's control to keep on moving it forward. Yeah. And then other things will be, well, you can't notice the things out of your control, like the economy, interest rates, and things like that. If they start to improve, then that will have the biggest effect on the branch, because that's affecting every merchant, not just the Enfield. It's, you know, high interest rates, low economic growth, and it's, you know, that would be the biggest effect. But everything you do in the meantime will only help when you're setting
the framework out.
It will progress no matter what happens elsewhere, basically. The natural progression, if you keep on doing the good things and all the time, it would just have the knock-on effect all the time.
Cool. We're going to wrap up 4 more questions each. We've finished every podcast with this. Quick fire questions, we call them. So you've got to give me your first answers, nice and short and sharp. Don't overthink it.
Okay.
Favourite part of your job?
I think there's the diversity. I think everything, every day is different.
So different.
I think it's sort of, you can, like I said, you can plan it out in your head what you're going to do. Come in and completely nothing else. But then you get that little wince when someone comes in and spends 2, 3, 5K on an order. And like, it's been a good day.
Meeting new people seeing different people every day. I'm quite lucky. I don't have to see the same people every day. So I get branches sometimes. You see every same person every day. What do you do? Your wife and your kids. It really annoys me. So I don't get any of that because I just go. I'd go different branches on different days. So I'm quite lucky that I'm not the same people every day. It's quite nice and set your own destiny.
Yeah.
And that's the best bit.
Like it. Most difficult part of your job?
Traffic M25. I could spend 8 hours sometimes in the car if I'm going to some of the.
I tell you what, the times I phone you and you're stuck in traffic. It's ridiculous.
There's quite often if I go to the Midlands branches that they're 8 hours in a car days sometimes. But it's fine. But I'm used to it. But I listen to a lot of podcasts, but that way.
Adrian?
You become like a mental health sort of person for the branch.
Right.
A lot of people come with you with different issues. Sometimes in your head, you think like, it's not an issue. wherever you're coming to me, it's not an issue. It's not, you're just making it to be an issue. But obviously then you have to stay professional. You have to say, no, let's do it this way or that way, just to resolve your issue. Yeah, okay. Because if you don't have the issues that come through.
Is that just the way of the world though nowadays?
I think so. People have... Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Everyone comes with their problems to you, which is fine. But like I said, if it's a real problem, then you sort of understand why. But if it's something that they're just making
small.
Exactly, it's very small, and they're just making it up to be this big issue. You think like, I haven't got the time for this. I've got 100 emails to answer. I've got Aaron on my phone waiting for me to give him an answer or something. It's like, I ain't got the time, but you have to do it.
You do, yeah, that's right. Aaron, what's the most crucial trait someone needs to possess to do your role?
Calmness.
Go and explain. Yeah.
Many different things are thrown at you in a day, and you know, calmness is you know, it allows you to normally make a better decision.
Why is it important for a leader to be calm?
Because you need to be calm in the face of adversity, always. So, you know, and if you instill calmness, you'll instill calmness in others most of the time. And the other thing I'd say is consistency. You know, you've got more than one branch, you've got to have a consistent approach, because it's clear that the messaging is very important.
Yeah.
So if I give you a message at one branch, then this message has to be the same for the others.
Yeah.
Otherwise you get, well, you're telling him this thing on this bit. So you have to, and that's quite difficult sometimes, because you go six different places, and I need to make sure that I've got the same messaging across it all.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, calmness and probably. Yeah.
I like those two, calmness and consistency. You'll not go far wrong with those, rather than being constantly.
Yeah, you never be up and down. You just calm. Just try and stay level.
I agree with Aaron, but I'll probably add a communication into it with my role, because you need to communicate with people, not only customers, but your staff members, and you have to build relationships. You know, bringing someone in head office to help you out and stuff like that. You know, you build that relationship with them, you're more likely to get a quicker response from them. So yeah, probably communication and building relationship with people.
Good. Best piece of advice you've ever been given?
One advice that I come out, I don't know if it's the best piece of advice, probably is. Yeah, but
I told me one.
No, it was. So I used to, but when I started, and I had this regional managing director that took me on and supported me with my progression without my career. He goes, never talk to anyone about your wages. Do not talk about how much you earn, or what you take on, whatever. Just keep it to yourself. And if someone tells you what they earn, just keep it quiet. Because it's fine, it's down to them. But because that creates problems in the future for you. That's the sort of advice that I remembered, and I've never spoken about to anyone.
Over 20 years, many people will give me good advice.
Your dad must have. I know your dad, and your dad's a very wise man.
Nick, you yourself, when I first took the role, you give me a lot of advice. You know, my dad, Nick, Jack, others, you know, Rob, Cam, I talked to quite a bit. It's tricky to nail any down. I mean, I can't remember who said it, but one good bit always sticks there is never get too high in the good times or too low in the bad times. And then that also leads into that part of calmness. You know, there will be good times, there will be bad times, but you need to sort of not get too high or low in either, and you'll remain on track and focused. Because in these industries, you know, there's always something different around the corner.
Yeah,
you just never know how long it's gonna stay at that period or change as well. So yeah, that's it really.
Excellent, and that's a wrap. Thank you
very much.
Thank you both for coming.
Thank you for having us.
You've, just so that you're aware, you are the guests who have travelled the furthest to come and be part.
Can we get a medal?
So yeah, we'll get you. We'll get your train ticket back. Thanks for coming up. I do appreciate it. It's good to see you up here. Well done on what you're doing.
Thank you.
I think you've got some good plans in place there. So you know, keep up with that.
Yeah.
And to our viewers and listeners, thank you for joining us again. I hope you've enjoyed us. Another episode will be out in a couple of weeks' time. You can watch and listen to us on all the normal channels, YouTube, Spotify, Apple. If you have enjoyed it, it'd be great if you could like and subscribe, leave us a review. If you don't want to do that, if you could just share what we're doing with anybody who you think might be interested, that'd be much appreciated from us. So thanks again for joining us. We'll see you again in a couple of weeks. Goodbye. Thank you.
1, 2, 3, 4.